This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Don't forget to get your picks in for our Pick'em contest that goes on every week during the football season. You have till 5 p.m. tomorrow. The winner gets a Fan Zone gift card. Pick the winners of some games this weekend and do so by going online at charlestonsportsradio.com, charlestonsportsradio.com. If you ever missed anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. Or you can also find those podcasts available online also at charlestonsportsradio.com. Every Thursday at this time, we're joined by Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. Check out ParamountSports.com and find Lee on Twitter at Paramount Sports as he gives us his picks of the weekend. One of the best handicappers around, and he's with us now. Lee, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. I mean, I don't think anyone's thought that Texas A&M was going to beat Alabama. If they did, they probably weren't going to a vacation in the Bahamas, probably own an island by now. But that was fun to watch, especially not being a Nick. I mean, I'm an admirer as far as the way he coaches, but not a fan of him since he left the Dolphins high and dry. And so that was fun. And then in the NFL, I mean, looks like we might have a new king of the hill in the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, you're not kidding with the way they've been dominant of late. Let's get to some of these games because it's another intriguing weekend, as always, in football. You mentioned the Alabama loss. Meanwhile, Georgia took care of business. They're the number one team in the country. They take on Kentucky, and it's the first time we have two 6-0 teams in the SEC East specifically playing each other, and yet Georgia is favored by 23, a big number. What do you see here for this one, Georgia-Kentucky?
Okay, well, there's a couple reasons. Number one, two top defensive linemen are out for Kentucky. So when Georgia runs the ball, and that's the main way they operate on offense, they use the run to set up the pass. That's going to be a problem for Kentucky. And then, you know, the $64,000 question is, can anyone go toe-to-toe and do anything on this defense? And even though Kentucky's getting the most out of their offense built around running back Chris Rodriguez, I don't know if they can even get 100 yards rushing. I mean, they've held five or six opponents have the Bulldogs under 100 yards. Even Auburn, which is maybe not quite as good as Kentucky running the football, but pretty decent, they only had 46. So I think Mark Stoops right now, he knows that he has basically reached a mountaintop of whatever he can do at Kentucky, and his agent's probably talking to LSU or Miami. He'll tell you that he's not talked to them, but they always have their agent sniffing around. So I think Georgia's just too much. I mean, maybe someone at one time later in the year can match up with them, but not now. Bulldogs 37-7.
Just in general, do you think, I know they're number one, do you think Georgia, from what you've seen, do you think they are the best team in college football right now?
Yeah, not even close. Yeah,
I do agree with you.
I said before the year I thought Alabama was going to get beat. I just didn't think it was going to be by a second-string quarterback.
Right,
so.
I know it. A big shock Saturday. Elsewhere in the SEC, South Carolina, of course, a game we pay close attention to. They take on Vanderbilt. Neither team with a conference win, but I think a real indictment on Vanderbilt. South Carolina's favored by 18 against Vandy. What do you like there?
Vandy 1-5 against the spread this year, hasn't scored in SEC play. They got their win this year versus UConn, so they're not going to get blanked this year. They'll have one win. Just a third chalk roll here for the Gamecocks the last 2 years. If Will Muschamp dominated Vanderbilt all 5 years, I think so should this coaching staff here. Vanderbilt, just they don't tackle in space. I mean, just don't have any playmakers on offense. Give me the Gamecocks 35-10.
Yeah, and they could use a win like that against a lousy Vanderbilt team. Elsewhere here locally, of course, the other game of interest that we pay close attention to, Clemson coming off their off week, gets ready to go to Syracuse and play Syracuse tomorrow night. It's a Friday night game at the Carrier Dome. Clemson favored by 13, still getting these big numbers, especially on the road here against Syracuse. Who do you like in that game?
Okay, not looks-wise, in the face. But when you see him, you know, walking around, same number. Doesn't Garrett Schrader look a little bit like Trevor Lawrence? Would you agree? Same number?
Yeah, I could see it.
Tall, lanky.
Right.
But kid's a good runner, but not a good passer. The running back, Sean Tucker, is the real deal here. How do you lay two touchdowns with a Clemson offense in this state right now? 21 points is the top they've scored versus four Division I schools. One of the biggest mistakes people make is they lay double digits with a team having trouble on offense. I will not do it. Clemson wins 27-17, but the orange cover.
Yeah, I agree with you. Clemson continues to get these big numbers here, despite that struggling offense. Moving to the NFL, let's look at a couple of games there as we talk with Lee Sterling. He's on Twitter at Paramount Sports. Check out ParamountSports.com as well. More on that in just a moment. But in the NFL this weekend, Baltimore coming off that huge comeback on Monday to get the win. They now welcome in the Chargers coming off a nice win for themselves against the Browns. So you have 2-4-1 teams. The game's in Baltimore. The Ravens are favored by 3 against the Chargers. Who do you like in that game?
Well, credit Lamar Jackson. I mean, he basically did it on his own. Him and Mark Andrews were amazing. But they have no receivers. Their running backs just aren't good at all, let's be honest. And their defensive backs, I mean, they got a bunch of injuries there. They're using a bunch of guys that never had started in a game or played in games, and you can't do that against the Chargers. Chargers are a different team with Brandon Staley. I mean, he's showing new looks every single week, and the players are excited. They're a 56-yard field goal at the gun by Dallas's Greg Zuerlein away from being 5-0. This is where they do their best work. 8-3-1 against the spread last 12 road games here. I'm going with the Chargers, Super Chargers, 28-24.
Interesting. Another game in the NFL on Sunday that is certainly of interest. We've been already talking about it today and throughout the week. Minnesota and Carolina. The Panthers are a home dog, only a 1 point, but the Vikings are favored on the road. You have two running backs in Cook and McCaffrey who are still banged up. Two teams that could certainly use a big-time win on Sunday. The Vikings favored at Carolina. Who do you like in that game?
Yeah, the reason for the change in this line, Carolina opened up as a favorite, and now they're getting a point is probably because of Dalvin Cook's playing, the uncertainty with McCaffrey. But I like this Carolina team. I just think that Sam Darnold had one of those games. Maybe he was seeing the ghost of Adam Gase as he was playing, but three interceptions in that 21-18 home loss last week. So the Eagles, it happens. You know, it's going to be a growing process for him here, but the Carolina defense has got to pick it up, only two sacks the last two games. They should get two or three here in this game. Minnesota's really beaten up at running back and wide receiver. Their DBs aren't anything special. I like Carolina at home, 27-21.
Interesting. Talking with Lee Sterling, Twitter at Paramount Sports. And Lee, the football weekend, at least for the NFL, begins tonight. Tampa Bay, Philadelphia, Thursday night football. Tampa Bay going on the road, short week, favored by 7. I think it could be an intriguing game tonight. It's your game of the week. How can listeners get your insight and pick for that one?
Yeah, I have a real strong opinion on this game. If they want to get it, just call 800-400-9741. We'll give them that game for free. Again, the number 800-400-9741. We had another winning week last week, only one losing week since the start of the preseason. What a year it's been. Last year we were number one in football in the country, combined college football and the NFL. You want to hop on board if you've never been with us before? Just $247 gets you 3 weeks, $247, ParamountSports.com. Or how about this? Last year in hockey, the average $100 to $500 player, they won over $22,000 on our picks. We were 134-101. We also went 9-3 on our futures plays, a couple 50-unit max wagers. So anyone wants to hop on board, you can get hockey and basketball, both sports, through the entire season. We're talking about through the NHL Stanley Cup Finals and the NBA Finals in June 2022. Just $1,500. Use coupon code SAVE1000, ParamountSports.com.
Perfect. We're over 500 still on the year for all the picks I've given the show. 38, 35, and 2. So we're over 500. We're right there at 52% where, because of, you know, the VIG and everything, we're breaking even on the picks I've given on the show. All my winnings I threw right out the window on a terrible weekend this past weekend. Tonight, the Buccaneers go to Philadelphia. And the Buccaneers are favored by 7 at Philadelphia. Now, I always love home teams against the spread on short weeks. That trend has not been as profitable this year or even most of last year. But there was a point heading into last season, I used to tell you every Thursday, home teams cover the spread. It was about 65% of the time on Thursday Night Football. It hasn't been as consistent the last year plus. But still, you get the Buccaneers going on a short week. They're on the road for the third time last 4 weeks, short turnaround. Go to Thursday night, you know, go to Philadelphia on a Thursday night. The Buccaneers are the much better team than the Eagles. But that's a big number for a road team on a short week. I'm going to go with the Eagles as a 7-point underdog at home. I think the Buccaneers win, but I don't think they cover. And here's my other reason why. Tom Brady at night is not the same quarterback. I know Charge was raving about the matchup. I have Brady on all my fantasy teams. I hope he plays great tonight. He's been great this year. But what was his worst game this season? It was 2 weeks ago against the Patriots on Sunday Night Football. It was a night game. And you could say, well, the weather. Well, Mac Jones completed over 70% of his passes. I don't think it was the weather. I think it was the emotions of the game, and I also think it was that 8 o'clock kickoff. What was the Buccaneers' other closest game this season? Well, the first game they played this year, going off of their wins, that is, the Patriots game, and the first game they played against the Cowboys. When was that played? Thursday night. Tom Brady is 0-10 against the spread in his last 10 primetime games. He has not covered the spread in his last 10 night games. Their two worst performances this year in wins, obviously they lost to the Rams, but when they have won, when they were favored and they should beat teams pretty handily and they struggled, it was against the Cowboys and it was against the Patriots. Both games in which they were favored by 7-plus points and did not cover. Tonight, they're favored by 7. I don't think they cover. That's why I've been saying this afternoon, I think this is a sneaky good game tonight. I think this is an intriguing game. Jalen Hurts can make plays with his arm and his legs. When you have a quarterback like that, you can hang around a little bit. They did against the Chiefs. They came back to win last week against the Panthers. When you have a dynamic quarterback, right, that can make some plays and just go out there and run around and play school ball yard a little bit, it can help you hang in there, especially against good defenses. You can't plan for the unexpected. And, as I said, Tom Brady struggled that night. Now, we've done this on the show before, and I wish I had the numbers in front of me. You can look him up. His numbers are not as good at night, not only as a team perspective, not only against the spread, but statistically. And my theory has always been, Tom Brady has talked about it before, that he likes to get into bed by like 9 o'clock. So it's always been my theory that Brady, as he's 44 years old, and he's, you know, we're all creatures of habit. We're all stuck to that routine. If you have to get up early for work, I remember growing up, you know, family, a close family friend lived down the road from us, and, you know, he always had to get up early for work. By the end of the night, he's the one falling asleep. Everyone else is still ready to, you know, continue to hang out and have a good time. He's nodding off because he's not used to being up that late. He's used to getting up and going to work at 6 a.m. And so then comes Saturday when everybody wants to stay up, it's like, well, I'm not, my body's just not used to it. I'm tired. I've been up all day. I'm going to get up at 6 tomorrow. Tom Brady, somewhat similar. By the time this game kicks off at 8:20, he's used to climbing into bed with a book and going to sleep. And that's when the game's kicking off. And we're all creatures of habit, even professional athletes, especially professional athletes. And I know it sounds silly, like, oh, Tom Brady, just because he goes to bed early, he can't play well in these primetime games. Go back and look at the numbers. He struggles more in night games than any other situation. He has not covered a spread in 10 straight games at night. This year, yeah, the Rams, they lost to the Rams. That's their one loss. Otherwise, the games in which they were favored in, their two worst performances at night. Against the Cowboys, against the Patriots, both came down to a field goal. Both games decided by fewer than 3 points. So tonight, with all that said, I like the Eagles. Let's see how Brady plays tonight. He's been having a great year. He has a good matchup on paper tonight. But there's just something about it. In recent years, now that he's, you know, into his old age, he doesn't play as well at night because he's used to being in bed by the end of the first quarter. Remember last year at the Chicago Bears, he forgot how many downs there were in the fourth quarter against the Bears. That was a Thursday night game. It was a night game. When that moment happened, it was almost 11 o'clock. He's usually in his REM cycle by then. He forgot how many downs there were. How often do we see that from Brady? I know I'm talking about him like he's an 80-year-old man, you know, can't stay up until 10 o'clock. It's just his body is not trained to play these night games. He doesn't play as well. So let's roll with the Eagles, and let's see if my theory continues to hold. I think the Buccaneers win tonight, but I take the Eagles as the 7-point dog at home. Coming up, who has the most pressure on them in college football the rest of this season? We'll get to that next. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
It's Throwback Thursday.
What's today?
It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Coming up, who's under the most pressure in college football this year? Get to that here on the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Best song The Clash ever put out. This was on like NCAA football. Ooh, what year was that? 2005 maybe? This was part of that video game soundtrack. Great song, The Clash. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Lee Sterling. If you ever miss anything from the show, such as his picks of the weekend, you can find them on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. You heard that Seinfeld clip in the return back from the commercial break. It's the old Seinfeld bit. I was just talking last segment about Tom Brady and his struggles that night. Remember, it's what George Costanza said. Whenever I have an old man breathing down my neck at the Yankees, I book a late meeting. And Elaine says, what does that do? And he says, these guys, they're used to getting up at 4 a.m. by 3 o'clock, they're spent. They won't give you a hard time. And that's what she does with Jerry's father when he's working there at with Jay Peterman. Same idea with Brady. Brady wrote in his book that he goes to bed at 9 p.m. every night. So what do? You book a late game with Tom Brady. He's used to getting up at 5 a.m. by 9 o'clock. He's spent. He's done. Last year, he was 1-3 in night games with the Buccaneers. Quarterback rating of 73. His quarterback rating was over 100 during the day. During night games, 1-3 record last year, as many touchdowns. This year for Tom Brady, as mentioned, the two night games did not play great either. In fact, this year, quarterback rating at night in those two night games, smaller sample size, but it's 85. When he doesn't play at night, his quarterback rating is over 120. It's a big difference. Go back and look. It hasn't just been with Tampa Bay. These last about 5 years. He's into his 40s. He's got his routine. He's used to going to bed by 9 o'clock every night. Let's roll with the Eagles tonight as a 7-point dog at home. I opened the show today talking about the college football playoff. We heard from Greg Sankey, who was doing an interview on SiriusXM and said, you know, the SEC, we're good with a 4-team playoff. I've been saying for quite some time since this conversation has begun, yeah, I'm good with a 4-team playoff as well. I don't think we need to expand. I want to tie this into some other comments here from Feinbaum and Heather Dinich on ESPN's Get Up this morning. So let's get to the audio first, then I'll react, tie it all back to what we were talking earlier about the playoff, and in the process, let you know who's under the most pressure in college football this year. But it all begins with this audio from Feinbaum and Heather Dinich on ESPN's Get Up this morning.
I don't think I've gone against Alabama in 10 years, but I'm betting my house against them this time. I don't see it because they have to play Georgia. They can negotiate the rest of the season. They probably will if you look at the FPI. They don't have what I would call a really dangerous game left. Of course, I didn't think Texas A&M was a dangerous game. But to beat Georgia, they have to do things they haven't done this year. And quite frankly, Heather already laid out the Georgia template. I don't see it happening. Heather, what do you think?
Brian, I can't believe I'm saying this, and I hope that you have enough room in your house for the five people in my family.
Come on over.
But I agree with Paul. I can't believe I'm saying this on national TV right now because it's going to come back and bite me in the you-know-what. But Alabama's going to be out because I don't think they beat Georgia in the SEC championship. We have not seen a two-loss team get into the college football playoff. I'll remind everyone, the selection committee has to deem a team unequivocally one of the four best teams in the country. If they don't win the conference championship, can they do that with a two-loss Alabama? I don't think so.
That was Feinbaum and Dinich on ESPN Get Up this morning. Man, Feinbaum, he is quick to turn his back on you. He said the Clemson dynasty was done with after their second loss this year. Alabama loses one game. He's done with them. I laid it out earlier this week. Don't dance on the grave of Alabama. They still have everything right in front of them. ESPN's FPI gives both Alabama and Georgia 80% chance or higher of winning each of their regular season games the rest of the way. So we have essentially an 80% chance of getting an SEC title game of Alabama-Georgia. That's what it comes down to. As those two and others debate, will Alabama make the playoff? Is their season over? What it comes down to is if you believe they can beat Georgia in the national title game. Because, or I should say the SEC title game, which you might as well make the national title game. If Alabama does beat Georgia, they'll go into the playoff. If they lose, they won't, because you won't take a two-loss team. We've never done it before since the playoff has begun. So for Alabama, don't slip up along the way. Don't lose the Iron Bowl. Same with Georgia on the other side, right? Don't and if we get to that SEC title game with those two, then for Alabama, it's a win and in scenario. So if you're punting on Alabama, you either trust that they'll slip up against a team they shouldn't lose. I'm not taking that bet. I trust Nick Saban, especially after a loss. Or you're telling me you don't think they can get past Georgia, which is fair. I wouldn't blame you if you have that opinion, because Georgia is the number one team in the country. But again, neutral site comes down to one game, 50-50 coin toss, Kirby Smart against Nick Saban. I wouldn't count Alabama out of that game either. I think it's very bold to put the house on the line that they won't be there. I would probably do the opposite. I would bet Alabama. Saban is hard to doubt. Right, it's like what they always say about Vegas. How do they keep building all those casinos in Vegas? Yeah, because people keep losing. I wouldn't go against Nick Saban. You're not going to make money over the course of time betting against Nick Saban. You're not going to make money very rarely over the course of time betting against Las Vegas. I'm not going to bet against Saban. I think Alabama still gets to the playoff. I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Georgia in the SEC title game. But this takes me down a couple of different roads here. What I said off the top to tease this segment, who's under the most pressure in college football this year? I think, therefore, it leads to Kirby Smart for a couple of different reasons. Number one, I mean, you are the number one team. Theoretically, the number one team should win the national championship. So as we sit here today, Georgia is the best team in college football. Therefore, let's make this really simple. Georgia should win the national championship this year. On top of that, we know they haven't won in over 40 years. So there's already the pressure mounting on Kirby in Georgia. Then you go into the season with the expectations, whereas I was saying over the summer, the only reason to doubt Georgia is because you haven't seen them do it before. And maybe that's not a good enough reason, even if I'm guilty of it. So we knew going into the season, yeah, Georgia very much could win the national championship. Then they've gone out, they've played the games, and you watch them and you say, oh, yeah, they definitely could win the national championship. In fact, they probably should. And they have the number one defense, and if you don't win with this team, right, well, then for Kirby Smart, what more can you say? How much longer can we give you or forgive? Right? This is the year. If Alabama is in fact down, if Feinbaum and Heather Dinich are already willing now on October 14th to bet the house that they won't be a playoff team, that means they're probably not going to get past Georgia. So if you're Kirby Smart, you can't let them get past Georgia. And with college football, with Clemson down, and Ohio State not quite the same team, and even Oklahoma, despite their record, haven't looked quite as good. And with all this chaos in college football and nobody else stepping up, we thought it was Georgia and Alabama. Now it's just Georgia all by themselves. In fact, for the first time since the 80s, Georgia is ranked number one by themselves during a season. It only puts more pressure on Kirby Smart, which should be expected. It's like the Buccaneers last year. Right, you bring in Tom Brady. You're like the preseason. Yeah, it only puts more pressure. You should go win the Super Bowl. Congratulations, you won the Super Bowl. Yeah, you have the best team with the greatest quarterback of all time. You should do that. That's what's expected of you. Same with Georgia. You should go win the national championship. And at this point, I think anything less is certainly a disappointment for Georgia. I mean, if we're going to be so bold to say, yep, Alabama, they're done with. Their season's over. They can't compete with Georgia. They're not even going to get there. They're not making the playoff. They're done. In the process, that only puts more pressure on Kirby. Makes you a larger favorite. It portrays that game like, oh, there's no way Georgia should lose this one. Right? And you're portraying it like Alabama will have nothing to lose. It's all on Georgia. And we know about Kirby Smart blowing 13-point leads in a national championship, calling for a ridiculous fake punt at midfield in the SEC title game. These are the moments in which he has made some costly mistakes. What happens if we do get that SEC title game, Georgia, Alabama? Even if Georgia loses, they'll advance. But you won't be feeling as good about them going into the playoff if they're coming off a loss to Alabama. You'd come away thinking like, oh, maybe they aren't the best team in the country after all. Georgia, of course, all of the pressure is on Georgia. It's only October 14th. Just because they're the number one team now doesn't mean they will be at the year's end. You know, we've had other, Alabama was just a number one team. Why is there more pressure on Georgia? Because of all the buildup? Because of all the other teams struggling? Because everyone's already punting on Alabama, leaving Georgia all to themselves in the SEC and really in the top tier of college football? This is all on you now, Georgia. Right? We have turned away from Alabama got all the attention, and Georgia was, you know, in the sidecar leading up to this point. Now, we all looked at those two as the best teams in college football, but you always trusted Alabama more. Alabama was 1A, Georgia was 1B. Then Alabama loses, and now, oh, they're done. They're not making the playoff. Yep, Georgia, they're the best team, and all the pressure moves right onto their shoulders. Which goes part and parcel of what I was saying in the beginning, that if you're already going to tell me now Alabama's not a playoff team, if you think they're going to lose another game the rest of the season, I go back to what I said to open the show today. Is it really necessary to then expand to a 12-team playoff? Because if we do, why would you do it? Well, now you could get Alabama in the playoff. Would it be worthwhile if they lose to Texas A&M and you believe they're going to lose another game, and especially if they lose to Georgia, then you see, oh, yeah, you know, they're not on that level. They're not a national championship team. Georgia is certainly the better team. Would it then be necessary if the season played out that way? And when it was over, when the regular season was over, we said, well, Alabama's still going in. A 12-team playoff, put them in there. They'll be a 10 or 11 seed, who knows, whatever. Just get them in there. Is that worth it? If we're already willing to count out Alabama now and bet the house that they can't turn this thing around and they can't compete with Georgia here in October, then why expand the playoff to get teams like said Alabama, if that's how you feel about them? I don't. But if that's how you feel about them, why change the game to make sure they get another opportunity come playoff time? It's what I don't understand. You already don't think they can compete with Georgia, so why give them an additional opportunity to do so? But that's where I differ from Feinbaum and even Heather Dinich. Feinbaum can be real reactionary. We know that. Heather Dinich is usually well thought out and grounded. I'm surprised she agreed. I think it is a fool's game to count out Saban and Alabama. I think they'll be in the playoff still by year's end. At minimum, they'll be in that SEC title game playing Georgia to the very end. I don't think Alabama slips up before the SEC championship. And if they get there, I think it's a great game. I do not think you will watch Georgia and Alabama play and say, wow, Georgia, yeah, they're two touchdowns better. Or, man, they blew them out. They were much better. I think we'll get a competitive, tough game if those two meet. I think it's a dangerous proposition to punt on Saban and Alabama just because they lost one game to Texas A&M. It was their first loss in 2 years. I mean, come on. And we're already going to sell the house on them? I think that's a bold move. I think what it does in the process, put more pressure on Georgia, the most pressure in college football. Kirby Smart needs to get this done now. Otherwise, you look around and like, okay, I mean, what else do you need? You had the best defense in the country. You're the number one team. Everybody else was having a down year, right? You didn't have to worry about Clemson this year. And all the other quarterbacks are struggling. What more do you need to finally get it done? And I also think it shows, further illustrates, once again, another way to illustrate, we don't need to expand the playoff. Because otherwise we'd be having this debate about Alabama and put them in the playoff anyways. If you're ready to already punt on them in October, why make an exception to put them in the playoff in December or January? Not necessary. Coming up, we do our wrestling wrap-up every Thursday, so we'll have to do that when we come back. Plus, the Gamecocks missed out on a big-time recruit yesterday. It may actually be a good thing. It's the More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
New York City.
It's the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Get to the wrestling wrap-up coming up. Plus, the Gamecocks missed out on a big-time recruit yesterday, but it may actually be a good thing. It is a throwback Thursday. On this day in 1992, that's when the Braves got that big win to go to the World Series as Francisco Cabrera got that base hit that drove in David Justice and Sid Bream for the 3-2 win. That classic moment at home plate, and Braves are moving on this day almost 30 years ago, 29 years ago. Also on this day, by the way, baby Jessica fell into the well in Texas on this day in 1987. It took 58 hours to get her out, and the whole country could watch it as it was televised on CNN. Joe, do you remember that, when baby Jessica fell down a well in 1987?
I actually do.
Yeah. Happened on this day 34 years ago. Do you remember watching it, or do you just remember, you know, that it happened?
I just remember hearing about it, you know, and just hearing the updates here and there.
Right. Yeah. On this day, 1987. How about that? Well, every Thursday on this show, we devote a few moments to the wrestling world. Joe gets us caught up on everything going on, and it's time to do it now, our weekly wrestling wrap-up.
It's time.
Look at this.
For Producer Joe's.
He's got the fans behind him.
Wednesday Wrestling Wrap-Up.
It's like a dream come true.
Right here.
He's all fired up now.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
And if they're smart, they'll listen. So what are we waiting for?
Well, what are we waiting for? Well, some people are waiting for the American and National League Championship Series to begin.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, tomorrow night with your Boston Red Sox taking on the Houston Astros in Game 1 of the ALCS, that'll be on Fox at 8 o'clock. Normally, that's when WWE SmackDown airs. So tomorrow night, that will be moved to Fox Sports 1 or FS1.
Sorry, WWE.
And I'll get to this later, but the last 30 minutes have been advertised to be commercial-free.
Ooh.
There's, yeah, something interesting going on here.
Nice.
Okay, some upcoming events. In fact, a week from today, WWE will be in Saudi Arabia for Crown Jewel. That'll begin at noon Eastern, so we'll be able to give you some updates as they come along.
Perfect. There we go.
All right, a week from Saturday, Impact will present Bound for Glory. That is their WrestleMania. That'll be on pay-per-view. A week from Sunday will be By Any Means Necessary, presented by the NWA, and that's also going to be on pay-per-view. And then October 26th, NXT will have Halloween Havoc on USA Network.
Oh, yeah, my favorite.
Okay, some recent title changes. Major League Wrestling has a new world champion. For the first time, in fact, Jacob Fatu's reign came to an end at 825 days.
Oh.
As a couple weeks ago, he dropped the title to national openweight champion Alex Hammerstone. Now, I have to correct myself. I was thinking Hammerstone would have to give up the secondary title, you know, if he becomes a world champion, because that's been common practice through the years. But evidently, MLW has some different rules, so Alex Hammerstone is now a double champion.
Nice. Must be nice to be picked over the other guy to continue your long reign.
And so Alex Hammerstone, he's been holding the national openweight championship. He's the inaugural champion. He's held it since June 1st of 2019.
Wow.
So he's still currently the longest reigning champion of any major or major independent company.
Hmm. How about that?
And, of course, you got Tajiri
from
back in the day. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, and he is MLW's new middleweight champion, defeating Myron Reed for that title at MLW Fightland last week.
Oh, there we go.
And we were talking earlier about how the last 30 minutes of SmackDown will be commercial-free.
Yeah.
Seems to be some reasons for that. AEW is actually going to do a one-hour buy-in on YouTube at 9 o'clock Friday.
Interesting.
Okay, so that's going to compete head-to-head with the last hour of SmackDown.
Oh.
That's right. Okay, and that's going to, and of course, that's the lead-in hour to AEW Rampage, that comes on at 10 o'clock on TNT.
Mm-hmm.
And earlier this year, Vince McMahon was asked about AEW, and he supposedly said he didn't consider him serious competition. Well, he must be now, because WWE has been rumored to have been leaking fast national rating numbers for AEW Rampage over the last couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
which may be leading to all this going on right now, these different moves made by the two companies.
Mm.
And also, it's been noticed that WWE's been allowing more profanity and edgier content on Raw and NXT, which but not so much on SmackDown, which, of course, Raw and NXT are on USA, which is a cable network, and Fox is a broadcast network.
That's right. Bring back the Attitude Era. That's what we need.
So, it looks like they might be doing that.
Good.
I think they are considering AEW a real competition after all.
Good.
Now, could we end up seeing The Rock in an AEW ring?
Oh.
Because Max Caster of The Acclaimed, he called out The Rock in a rap he did for TMZ earlier this week. He mentioned that Dwayne Johnson, The Rock's real name, of course, taking part in a song by rapper Tech N9ne, a song called Face Off, and tells Johnson to come to Dynamite.
Oh, that would be something.
Yeah. Yes, it would. Now, that of course, that brings a question. You know, will Johnson actually, does he have too much loyalty to Vince McMahon, or is he willing to jump ship, you know, somewhere, even if it's for a one-off appearance?
Yeah, that'd be a bold move.
Okay, and also Impact has signed a deal with Global Sports Network Extreme, and that's expanding the promotion's reach throughout all of Russia and the Commonwealth of Independent States, which, of course, is the former Soviet Union. Okay, and then also a bit about Ring of Honor's women's world champion, Roxy. Of course, she takes her name, The Rock, from The Rock, her favorite wrestler, but she dropped the C on it.
Yeah.
I guess just moved the C afterwards because her real name, of course, being Carla Gonzalez. Well, she can vote. She cannot purchase an alcoholic beverage or rent a car yet because she's only 19 years old.
Mm.
But she's already been wrestling for almost 5 years now. And also, Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like Ted DiBiase Jr. may be the real Million Dollar Man, as in millions owed.
I saw this, yeah.
Okay, yes. Ted DiBiase Sr. and Jr. and also another son, Brett DiBiase, are having to pay back quite a bit of money to the state of Mississippi. Okay, those were welfare funds that were given to groups to do some social services and things like that. Well, a lot of that stuff was misappropriated to the total of $77 million. Because some of it was, you know, stolen, some of it was misappropriated and things like that. Well, let's see. Brett DiBiase has to pay back $225,950. Heart of David Ministries, which is controlled by Ted DiBiase Sr., $722,299. Ted DiBiase Jr., $3.903 million.
Mm.
And also a couple other sports-related names of interest.
Yeah.
One of the Marcus Dupree Foundation. Marcus Dupree was a subject of a 30 for 30 show. He was a very highly touted recruit, went to Oklahoma for about a year and a half, then transferred to Southern Miss, then to the USFL and everything.
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to be, like, even better than Herschel Walker at high school and college level.
Yeah.
Well, his foundation, if this is the same Marcus Dupree, $789,534. And Favre Enterprises.
Yeah.
Yes, that Brett Favre. Yeah, they owe $828,000.
Yes. Now, I know he paid back originally $500,000, but he still owes over $800,000 more.
Okay, and that's it for now. And between now and then, have a slamming good time.
All right, our wrestling wrap-up that we do every week on the show. Yeah, Brett Favre making a lot of headlines this week for that whole fiasco. We'll wrap up your Thursday. When we come back, it's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Put a funky finish here Thursday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. You can also find the show on demand online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through our free app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, which allows you to take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Tune in radio, your smart speaker, or a free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 9 different states and multiple countries on this Thursday afternoon. Just announced that the St. Louis Cardinals fired their manager, Mike Schilt. So they won 17 straight in September. They go to the playoffs. They battle the Dodgers to the final pitch, and then he's out of a job. Now, of course, they were underachieving until that 17-game winning streak, and Schilt made a couple of questionable decisions in that wild card game, but I'm surprised by that. So you have the Cardinals and the Padres have openings. two good jobs there. Potentially the Yankees may become open. They still have to decide by the end of the World Series on what they're going to do with Aaron Boone. Could have a couple of interesting jobs for managers in Major League Baseball. Before we go, let me circle back to this. You can always find anything from the show on demand. We talked about this earlier. The Gamecocks missed out on a top recruit last night as a tight end. Oscar Delp chose Georgia over the Gamecocks. And he was ranked, depending on where you look, either the number two or the number three tight end in the country. I'm sure he's a player that will have a great career. But when asked about these teams, it was a lot of I and me, what they could do for him. Right, they can develop me into a good tight end. They could help me get to the next level. It really wasn't anything about the actual teams themselves, the culture, the atmosphere, the environment, what it is about those programs you like other than what they can do for you. And I'm sure most recruits and kids and all of us probably have this perspective on a lot of things. You're looking out, you have to look out for yourself because nobody else will. But for Shane Beamer building that culture, what he's trying to build there early here with South Carolina, maybe it's okay they missed out. Maybe it wasn't going to be a good fit. A lot of I, a lot of me for the Gamecocks. You need a little we to build this thing right now. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Let's roll with the Eagles against the spread tonight. Bucks went outright, but I don't think by more than 7. We'll see what happens. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon for a Football Friday. It's the Moore Midday Show on ESPN Radio.